Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. On today's program, I'll be discussing a fascinating new anthology just published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux called Labor Day, True Birth Stories by Today's Best Women Writers. It contains 30 essays by some of today's absolutely best and most fascinating women writers. And my guests are writer and novelist Eleanor Henderson, who co-edited the anthology, and poet Sarah Jeffress, who is a contributor. Eleanor Henderson received her MFA from the University of Virginia. Her first novel, the very well-received 10,000 Saints, was a New York Times top 10 book of the year, and she is an assistant professor of fiction at Ithaca College. Sarah Jeffress received her MFA from Cornell and her PhD from Binghamton University. Her first collection of poetry is called Forgetting the Salt. She is currently working on several projects, and she also teaches writing privately. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tish.
Now, Eleanor, I want to know what motivated you to work on this book. I understand it took about 6 years to compile this. Well, what was the impetus behind it?
I was pregnant, and I was starving for birth stories. And this was about 6 years ago. My first son's about to have his sixth birthday. And just before I was about to give birth, I really just wanted to know all the details. And so I sent an email out to my friends. And I said, how did it happen for you? Did your water break? What did it feel like? How did you know you were in labor? And a number of my friends sent me these wonderful emails. The best stories were written by my friends who are writers, of course. And so I got one story that was 4 pages long by my good friend Anna Solomon. And it was richly detailed with, you know, dialogue and well-crafted characters. And it was hilarious and wonderful and poignant. And after getting that story, Anna and I kind of looked at each other and said, you know, these should really be collected. These are too good to just sort of share over email. Women readers should be able to have access to birth stories. And we had never seen anything quite like this on the show.
Yeah. And you know, when I was reading it, I couldn't believe that. All the books I've read, all the, you know, the second wave of the feminist movement, no one has really written that much about this.
Yeah.
So the anthology ended up with 30 essays. Did you have a criterion that you expected, or was it totally free?
It was really free. You know, we entered this project, and we still believe that birth is inherently interesting. And there's no such thing as a boring birth story. Of course, you know, some birth stories can be told more elegantly than others. And we wanted to value that criterion more than any other. We wanted really strong writers to tell these tales. And so we were really pleased but not entirely surprised that, you know, these writers who are so talented were able to produce these stories that were so rich.
And I was wondering, and I'll ask you about this too, Sarah.
Of course.
Did any of these women think about, oh, I don't know if I want to share my private story? I mean, this is a very intimate situation that happens when you're giving birth.
They did.
Did people censor themselves, do you think?
I don't know if they censored themselves. If you had to take some time to think about it, you know, there's certainly some writers who did not censor themselves at all. Sarah is one of them.
Yes.
thankfully. Thanks for the Sarahs.
It doesn't sound like you did either.
I didn't much either, I admit. But, you know, some writers did have to think about it. Some thought about it and slept on it and tried to write their stories and decided they weren't able to share them. So, you know, it's not easy to write one's birth story. And you can sense some writers kind of struggling against sharing their stories. Uh-huh. A couple of our writers in the anthology don't share all of the details because they kind of hold those details so precious and so close. But there are a wide variety of essays, and many of them have plenty of gory detail, just the kind of detail that I was looking for.
Oh, absolutely. Gritty, gritty, gritty. For someone who's never had a kid, this was quite a weight. an eye-opener. So Sarah, let's get to yours. Yours is called Blood and Chocolate, and you are one of those people who did not hold anything back, so it seems. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, birth stories to me are really funny, and when I have been putting my daughters to bed before this anthology, actually, they often asked me, tell me a story about what life was like before me, or tell me a story about you before we came to you. So I would invent this story about how they were in the stars and they saw me down below and they thought, oh, she's funny. She wears blue hair and talks in accents and we'll go find her. And that they chose me and I chose them. And I often talked, they were little at that time, and I talked about finding a swimmer rather than saying sperm, because that was a bit complicated for a 2-year-old. a swimmer who swam into my body, and then they swam out, and it was sort of this romantic mermaid birth story.
Oh, wonderful.
And
I love it.
Eleanor said, you know, will you consider writing your birth stories? I said, yes, absolutely, because now I get to tell the truth. Now it doesn't have to be all beautiful.
And tell us a little bit. You had a really hard time.
You know, I had a really challenging time, both getting pregnant and having our daughters, the girls. It was complicated because I wanted to think through it. I think I even said that. I had this idea that I could think my daughter out and that I could birth her like Athena. I lived in my brain. I remembered when I started to push, I said, I don't think I read enough about pushing. And the midwife said, it's not about what you read. And, you know, labor was really challenging for me because I had to be both in myself and out of myself at the same time. And it just, it seemed to go on and on forever.
Did you ever feel in peril? Because it sounds like your blood pressure went up.
Yeah.
You had all these scares.
I had these moments that were quite scary. But I also, as soon as I became pregnant, I sort of started talking to my girls right away, and we were having a dialogue. So when I was in labor, the dialogue just continued. You know, even with Frida, my youngest, when the labor was going on and on, I just decided that I was going to write her out. Mm-hmm. So I started writing a letter. You know, dear Frida, this is your day. I know you think you're on your own clock. I'm done. You need to come out. You know, just, but also like an invitation. Like, I love you. I've chosen you. The world is better now. You know, come. You know, we're excited for you. So I think I kind of faced those moments of scariness, again, with what I could write, what I could think, and, you know, trusting that dialogue between myself and the child growing inside me.
Mm-hmm. And do you believe that you chose those girls? Do you believe the story that you tell?
Yeah. Yeah. Although, you know, they're fabulous and funny, but anytime they misbehave, I immediately blame it on the sperm donor. And say that it has nothing to do with me at all.
Yeah. You know, that's a new aspect of birth, too, that nobody has really talked about. A lot of lesbians are having sperm donors in their as a way to give birth. Was that an experience unto itself? I mean, you talk a little bit about that, too.
You know, that was quite funny because I always knew that I wanted to have children. And you can buy sperm on the internet really easily.
Really?
Really easily. And what was interesting to me about it was that I wasn't particularly interested in what the sperm donor looked like. But I'm a bit of a snot, and I wanted to know that the sperm donor could read and write. So I researched.
You didn't want somebody with a 2-digit IQ, other words, right?
No, I didn't care. Blonde, brown hair, tall, short, muscular. I wanted healthy, and I wanted smart. Those were the two requirements. And smart could be like, you know, smart doesn't have to be educated, PhD smart, any kind of smart, right? I didn't want lazy, I guess, you know? And so I found a sperm bank where they required the donors to write essays about why they were donating.
Wow.
So I read those essays first and made sure they were healthy. The donor details, of course, not the essays. And if they were healthy and I liked their essay, then we sort of narrowed down the choice.
That's really interesting to me.
It was also interesting to me that sperm cost more on the West Coast than the East Coast. So the sperm bank we ended up going with was in Virginia, which I thought was funny because I'm from Virginia and I often try to run away from Virginia. but it was in Northern Virginia. Sperm from California cost twice as much.
Wow, maybe because everybody's so laid back, they don't really want to deal with it, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I wanted to bring up, too? The fact that childbirth has always been romanticized, at least when I've read about it, seen it in film. Why do you think that is? And obviously, this is more gritty and scary and perilous than anybody's ever told.
Yeah, I think birth can be scary. It can be scary to talk about. We did want to kind of correct the vision that we saw of birth out in the world, you know, with a woman having the water break in the restaurant and then scurrying to the hospital where she screams at her husband. And, you know, sometimes it goes that way. Sometimes those are details that are part of the story. But everyone's story is a little different, and everyone's story has some of the same elements in it. And we wanted to kind of honor the variety of the birth story. You know, we edited 30 stories, and I could keep reading, you know, and editing, I think, 30 more because they were so different, and yet we saw these very interesting connections between them. So I don't know why we don't talk about birth in the kind of detail that we would like to see people talk about in part because it's scary. You know, there are some dark stories.
And it is a mess,
Scientology.
You know, and in many ways it's a messy enterprise.
In every way.
Nobody wants
messy.
To talk.
In every
reading
way.
These essays.
I think one line of Sarah's essay is, no one ever tells you about the blood dripping down your legs.
Yeah.
And it's true. It's messy physically. It's messy emotionally. Mm. You know, there are some really triumphant stories in the book, but there are also some stories that are tragic. And that can be hard for people to talk about, certainly in polite conversation.
Oh, and I think it was really important to hear about the sad stories and the mm-hmm. ones that didn't come out as bright and shining births, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Sarah, you said in your essay that being pregnant was like a seesaw between ultra terror and complete awe.
Yeah.
To tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I think that's part about the dialogue that I sort of had with the girl sort of growing inside me. And, I didn't know whether it was a girl or a boy. At first, I would just be like, okay, here we are on this journey. But, you know, the seesaw would be moments where I would go to the doctor and my blood pressure would be so high that the nurse would go out of the room and say, bring another nurse in and say, no, you take it. And then another nurse would go out and go, no, you take it.
Because,
and then
God.
They'd be like, is this machine right? And I started laughing because they wouldn't tell me the number. They were like, it's just high and you need to lay down, you know? And they would wait. So there were moments like that. There was a particular moment when I had an ultrasound and they could only find... We have four chambers of the heart, right? Only they could find three. Sorry, I couldn't remember. Three chambers of Isla's heart, and they couldn't find a fourth.
Mm.
And I was like, what do you mean you can't find the fourth? Look again. And I was like, I'm sure it's there, right? And so then they sent me to a specialist, and the specialist had all these books in the office about what could happen to children who were sick or, you know, born with different body parts not all quite together. I, of course, had to look at all of those because I was obsessed. And then he did an ultrasound and went, oh, there's the fourth chamber in the first few seconds.
Oh, my God.
And so there were moments like that. There were complete terror that I thought, can a woman have a baby with three chambers of a heart? Mm-hmm. I didn't even know.
And can your blood pressure get low when you say they only found three?
Exactly. But then they found it and it was fine. You know, some of the moments of awe were when she moved or the different food cravings I had or... how she really, when I would put on Courtney Love and dance around, how she would just move and move and move, right? And then I would put on like Yo-Yo Ma and it would be complete quiet, you know. So
developing taste already.
Musical preferences and food preferences.
And Eleanor, I want to talk to you obviously about your essay too. Yours was called Two Lines. It's the last essay in the book, at least the book that I had.
Right.
You had trouble conceiving. The whole enterprise was really difficult from day one. Talk to us a little bit about it.
Yeah, it was also difficult for me, although not as difficult as it was for some of the other women in the anthology. It took me about a year to get pregnant with each of my sons. I found out along the way that I had endometriosis, but didn't know at the beginning. So part of my essay is about sort of trying to figure out the mystery of our own bodies mm-hmm. and trying to control mm-hmm. them, which of course is something that you have to let go of during the birth process. Mm-hmm. But maybe as a writer as well, you know, I never sort of met a problem I couldn't solve if I just thought about it hard enough.
Exactly.
And so I remember about 8 months into trying to conceive my first child, just feeling so helpless because I couldn't solve this problem. And so eventually I did. You know, I did enough homework so that I could figure out what was going on in my body even when the doctors couldn't, and ended up having a laparoscopy, which relieved some of the endometriosis and was able to get pregnant both times. And the essay is also about my mother's difficulty getting pregnant. She had adopted a son, thinking that she was unable to get pregnant, but then also was sort of able to outwit the doctor's diagnosis and conceive on her own. So sort of about trying to kind of triumph over our bodies when they're not cooperating with us.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Eleanor Henderson and Sarah Jeffress. We're talking about a new anthology called Labor Day, True Birth Stories by Today's Best Women Writers. To tell us a little bit more, Eleanor, about your experience, you talk really frankly about the fact that your husband was freaked out by a lot of this. Did you have to get his permission? Did you ever think, oh my gosh, I shouldn't reveal this?
I did. I was a little nervous about writing about him, as I always am. And as always, he was a little squeamish, although no more squeamish than he was in the delivery room. But, you know, ultimately gave me his blessing. Thank you, Aaron. And And I wanted to tell people about the fact that not every husband is going to be like the encouraging birth coach who's, you know, breathing, the Lamaze breathing with a partner, or like the freaked out dad in the, you know, in the movies who's getting yelled at by his wife. You know, there are other versions.
There's so
of
many
what
stereotypes like
might
that,
look
aren't
like.
There?
Yeah. So he was nervous. He was nervous, and I was kind of, you know, nervous about his experience, and I wanted him to be involved in a certain way at a certain point. And then I just kind of let that go. You know, my first birth, I was a little maybe disappointed by how actively involved he was. He was very nervous, and so he couldn't, you know, look at the baby coming out. He had to kind of sit behind my shoulder. By the second birth, he was more involved in that he, you know, videotaped the thing from, you know, the proper perspective. And I had let go, too, of what my vision of what I wanted his role to be in the birth was. And I actually, he was sick during my the birth of my second child. He had a rare skin disorder that really debilitated him. And so he slept during most of my labor, which sounds really awful that he was sleeping. But, you know, he was really sick and exhausted and fatigued.
But you had your mother helping you with this, too. You
had
other family members.
Yeah, I had my mother there. But, you know, there was a certain point during my second pregnancy where I was standing in the shower just laboring by myself for about an hour. My husband was sleeping in the next room, and I was alone in the shower, and it was fine. It was wonderful. It was exhilarating to be in my own private pain, and he was in his private pain, and he kind of woke up for the good part and was there to see the good part. And I felt really strong, and I felt connected to my mother who had labored by herself in a foreign country, and to my grandmother who had labored by herself, you know, when her husband was overseas during the Second World War. And that's something that comes up in a lot of the other essays as well, is this feeling that we're surrounded by our ancestors and connected to other women who are doing the same thing that we're doing.
Yeah.
So I grew a lot, I think, between my first and second birth, and I think a lot of the other women in the anthology did too.
This is fascinating. Did you want to add anything,
Sarah? I was just going to say, I remember at the end of the essay, you have this great line about what your husband says about how brave or strong you were. I forget the word that you used.
I think he said something like, your mom just got some serious cred or something.
Yeah, something like that. You know, and so, I think.
I think it's interesting that partners have to just see how strong women are in childbirth. You know what I mean? Now, I find it interesting in this book, and we were talking about this before the interview started, a lot of the women in this book did choose natural childbirth, and you have said that some of the reviews have called that out, saying that it's prejudiced in that way, and you didn't have enough variety of people with different experiences. Right. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, we've been a little bit surprised by the response to the book, and to the extent that it's been reviewed, there've been a lot of mixed reviews. You know, thankfully, it's gotten a lot of nice press, but a couple of reviews in particular have noticed that there are a number of essays in the book by women who desired at some point a natural childbirth. You know, natural, I think we always have to put in quotation marks. But and I think it's true to a certain degree that, you know, women of a certain lifestyle who live in Brooklyn, you know, many writers that Anna, my co-editor, and I know, live in Brooklyn and, you know, maybe go to the same handful of doctors who specialize in natural childbirth. So to some degree, I think that it's a valid criticism. But on the other hand, the last thing that Anna Solomon and I wanted to do with this book is to create a kind of polemic about the way that people give birth.
In fact,
we wanted to do the opposite. We felt that too much of the conversation around childbirth in our country is about choices and is about finger pointing over those choices. So we were disappointed when a few reviewers felt that the book, because a number of the writers in the book, you know, happened to be a part of this sort of culture that valued natural childbirth, you know, we were disappointed that they felt that that was a kind of attack.
It seems to me, though, women are taking more charge of childbirth than my mother's generation, certainly. And so this is what women are choosing, it seems to me, that the women I know, and they're not all from Brooklyn.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It seems like as women take more control of this process of their lives, it used to be in the hands of male gynecologists in my mom's era.
Right.
I want to ask you both this. You both have given birth to two kids. And tell me how this has changed you in regard to your place in the world, your life as a woman. Has it changed you and your thoughts about yourself
I'm pointing to you, Sarah. The poet goes first.
I was going to go back to the review question, if I could, for a second while I was thinking about that. You know, I agree that a lot of the reviews are mixed, and some of the reviewers often argued, too, that you as an editor were trying to make a statement about how pregnancy and motherhood should exist, or as if there was one way. And I don't think that you were doing that at all. And I often want to call the reviewers up on the phone and take them for a walk at Treeman and talk to them. Some of them, you know, said that we were all quite witty and questioned this notion of a spirit cave or sort of the more metaphorical or ancestral place that a woman goes when she's in labor. Some women, not all women, whether they have one or not, a spirit cave, that is, that place in which to go that helps you connect to your body in order to let go and to let this new life come forth. And, you know, how it has changed me, back to that question. I think I always wanted to be a mother, but I had no idea that labor would be like a marathon, and I was not a marathon runner at all. Mm. And so it physically changed me because it immediately showed me that I had more strength and could trust blood and bones and chocolate and power and physicalness as much as I could trust my intellect, you know? Mm-hmm. So it connected me. It deeply grounded me and rooted me.
It got you more in touch with that physical side.
Yeah, absolutely. Like. All of the bones and all of the muscles that hurt and didn't hurt. And but I also think that it changed me in ways that it sort of opened me up to the world to make me more trusting. You know, having two girls sort of set forth the idea with the great responsibility of raising two feminists, and how exciting that would be, you know, two girls who could be present in their body, could feel strong in their body, could feel powerful in their body, mm-hmm. you know, could overcome challenges, could overcome moments where they would fail. You know, we have a thing in our house where we say, if you fail, then you try again, and you fail, and you try again, and then you talk to the failure, and then you try again.
Oh, nice. You know? Great.
So that's part of the ways that it changed for me.
How about you, Eleanor? How has it changed you?
I have an almost six-year-old who likes to procrastinate when it comes to bedtime. So he likes to bring up the big worldly questions, you know, at 8:45 when lights were out an hour ago. And so the other night he said, Mom, what did it feel like when you got me and Henry out of you? And then I said, honey, it hurt. It hurt, but it was the best day of my life. That was the short story. Mm. And that seemed to make him very happy. And then he said, well, which one of us hurt more? And so I said, you know, you did, honey, because he was born with his hand right up here under his chin. So
he was already stuck in the birth canal.
That's right. He was the thinker. But then he said, he wasn't quite sure how to put it, but I could tell what he wanted to say. He said, Mom, I'm so proud that you're a mom. And it was the most, you know, of course, gratifying moment. If I could put myself back in the, you know, 12 hours of labor, which isn't nearly as long as Sarah's labor was, you know, to sort of feed myself that little light at the end of the tunnel, it'll be worth it one day. I think that would have been a nice sort of message to send myself. So, you know, I agree with Sarah that birth really empowered me as it was the most difficult thing that I had to do. But it was incredibly empowering. And being a mother is empowering. It's a big responsibility. So, you know, I had this sort of surge of endorphins and oxytocin, you know, after giving birth to my sons, as most mothers do. And I think I'm still sort of riding that wave to some degree. we wanted to show that there are births that aren't entirely traumatic, you know, that's one of the reasons why we wanted to leave my essay as the last essay in the book. There's a moment at the end of the essay where my midwife, who's also very pregnant, says to me, when I'm trying to offer her my thanks, she says, I'd take a birth like yours. And so I sort of wish it on her. And it was a beautiful birth.
That was
so,
a lovely, you know, last
there
line.
Can
yeah.
be, there can be plenty of beauty in births, too, in birth stories.
Yeah. Well, what do you hope people will take from this anthology? Are you expecting anything from your audience in regard to this book?
I would hope that women could talk more about their body, and whether that's that it's at a book club and they have a conversation and birth stories get shared, I would hope that it would break down sort of the silence that women have around their birth stories.
Especially the sad ones and the tragic
ones. Especially the sad ones and the tragic
ones.
Yeah. I think we hold our birth stories in our body and they're aching to be told. You know, I feel like there was a quote recently that I read about Maya Angelou, who, who just passed, who said something about the untold story lives in the body and how deep sorrow it will cause if we don't tell it. So I feel like the birth story is a story for every woman, whether she chooses to become a mom or suddenly becomes a mom, or that there's a story around it, you know?
Yeah. Did you find it cathartic to write these essays? Did other women tell you that they felt that way as well?
Yeah.
Yes, they did. They did. Yeah, I hope that women will take that as well. You know, we hope that one of the things that women will want to do after reading the book is to write and share their own stories. Mm-hmm. And we encourage them to do that on our website, labordaybook.com. Mm-hmm. You can share your story there, or share it with your book club or your women's group or your play group, because there is power in telling that story. I also hope that it in some way prepares women for birth. I use the word prepare in air quotes as well, in part because we felt that all of the manuals that we were seeing on the shelves, all the how-to guides, all the pregnancy diaries weren't really fully preparing women for birth, and that, in fact, all of the thinking that we do, especially as writers, and preparing for birth in some ways might backfire, right? Because we have the illusion that we have some sense of control over our birth when we go into birth with a plan. I think that the most valuable thing that women can do to prepare for a birth or even to reflect on a birth after they've gone through this incredible experience is to read the stories of other women and to share their own stories.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you would have done differently in regard to your birth experiences? I mean, yours sounded like it was really wonderful.
It was wonderful. It hurt like hell. Hurt like hell.
I probably would have gotten the epidural earlier.
I think if I were to have a third, I think I would get an epidural just to see what it would feel like.
I think I would get an epidural as I was checking in.
Yeah.
And I would have a third in a second, even after two traumatic ones.
I think I might do the same.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow, you guys are amazing. We're almost out of time. Really quickly, either one of you want to talk about new work you might be working on, might be coming out soon?
I'm working on a second collection of poetry called What the Mouth Wouldn't Say, and I'm hoping to have that out at some point at the end of the year. There's different poems from that coming out in different journals, and I also have a novel called Running After Jesus.
And what about you, Eleanor?
I am working on another novel, also set in the South, like Sarah's novel.
I can't wait.
Yeah, set in South Georgia in the 1930s. So coming along slowly. Two kids, you know, they tend to really put a ding in your writing time. So slowly, just like birth. It's all slowly, trying to release that control.
It's gonna happen. Contact information, you gave the website for the birth stories. Any contact information for either one of you want to give out?
I have a website called sarahjeffress.net. You can find me there.
And eleanorhenderson.net or labordaybook.com.
Great. Well, Eleanor Henderson and Sarah Jeffress, thank you so much for joining us. Again, the book is called Labor Day, True Birth Stories by Today's Best Women Writers. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.